Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors.
We are going to have an interesting, exciting show tonight. We have some great guests. I'll introduce them in just a moment. Anyway, nice to have you with us. The number, if you want to be on the program tonight, is 1-800-966-1039. And I think that is a toll-free statewide number, is it not, Norm?
Yes, it is. And like Bob would say, dial all the numbers, even if you're in-state.
That's right. And if you're calling us, turn your radio down.
Yes, right? Otherwise there's like a what?
Get an echo.
Eight-second delay or something.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, we're going to introduce the crew first and then our guest tonight. The man behind the controls there in the operations center, he is known as the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, Mr. Norman Plord.
Good evening, Paul. Was it Chicken Little who said, the sky's falling, the sky's falling?
Yes, the sky is falling.
Sure feels like that last
in
couple
buckets,
of days.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, our Bob Lehman is our co-host, is taking the night off. He'll be with us, I think, next week. He's a little under the weather, but he'll be all right. And our guest tonight, in this order, directly across from me, is the regional biologist down in Gray, Scott Lindsay.
Thank you, Paul.
Nice to have you here, sir.
Thanks for the invitation.
And you brought your sidekick up here from Portland, Maine, a former science teacher and an active bird hunter, John Bernard.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Nice to have you here, John.
Thank you.
And you're probably wondering, what are we going to talk about tonight, right? Well, we're going to talk about pheasant. Believe it or not, in the state of Maine, if you're in the right place at the right time and you can't find any grouse up there north of Waldegrass, you can go down to the Cumberland County area and you can actually hunt live pheasant. No kidding. And we're going to delve into that in detail here in just a few minutes. And if you have any questions, again, the number is 1-800-966-1039. A couple of things to remind you. We have, if you want to find, listen to our podcast of previous programs, you can do so by going to, what is it, Norm?
Oh, it's WVOMFM.com, and then you should see a podcast.
And you just click on listen.
Click on it.
Click on listen. All right. And also want to remind you, we're streaming live anywhere in the world. If you have somebody living in Bucharest, for example, they can hear the Maine Outdoors.
They can dial you in.
On their, online. And that's exciting news. We also have some listeners outside Maine, a little closer than Bucharest, and we always welcome them every week. Let's see, a couple of things. The November issue will soon be on the newsstand, I think probably the end of next week. You'll know it because there's a big, handsome white-tailed buck on the cover, and some great stories in the November issue. We know that the deer hunters are getting eager to get at it when the firearm season opens. And do you know, Norm, when the firearm season opens in Maine?
Next Saturday, right?
Maine residents only day.
Maine residents only day.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I always thought that was a little discriminatory toward those people in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, but anyway.
Well, we're not the only state that does that, though.
Our, that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, half hour before sunrise on Saturday, October 28th, is opening day. So don't forget that. Make sure you get your gun oiled, get your compass out, and all your gear ready, because it's the opener on Saturday, October 28th. If you'd like to get a subscription to the journal, we urge you to do that. You can save a bundle of money. We like it when you buy it at the newsstand, but you can save some bucks if you get a subscription. You can get it delivered to your home every month by calling Alicia at our office, and her number is 732-4880, 732-4880. And don't forget to check out our website and check out Maine Outdoor Connections. We have a lovely website, and we've got a whole bunch of new recipes on the Maine Outdoor Connections. Just click on that and go to Outdoor Recipes. Let's see, a couple other things in the digest. Youth Hunting Day kicked off yesterday. I think it was yesterday, right, Scott?
I thought it was Friday.
It's Friday and Saturday. It was a two-day youth hunt.
Something new, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, great. Did it go okay as far as you know?
As far as I know, it went well. Friday was better of the 2 days, I would think, better conditions. But yep. I do know that I had one of my staff out doing some data collection on the at one of the registration stations to greet some of the youth hunters, many of whom I'm sure were big smiles in their faces. So I'm sure despite the rain, they were out there, they worked hard, and I'm sure there were a lot of deer that were brought in.
And probably some young people hooked on hunting.
Absolutely.
I'm sure. Okay, anyway, that took place on Friday and Saturday. That's a good thing. That's a two-day hunt now instead of a one-day. And remember, Maine residents only can start hunting on Saturday, October 28th. That's next coming Saturday, a half hour before sunrise. And let's see, the grouse hunt is still on. Yours truly spent 4 days up at a sporting camp up at Chandler Lake. And I can tell you that we had a great time, but Norm, the grouse are a little scarce.
A little scarce.
Yeah, we had to work for them. And, you know, it was tough hunting, but we did find some, but not like it was last year, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, enjoy it. If you've got a working gun dog, this is the time to get out. The foliage is starting to fade a little bit, but there's still plenty of color up there. And if you get out and get that dog working, that's the main thing. Right, John?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You're a bird dog man, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. What's your favorite bird dog?
Well, I would have to say English setter.
Yeah. Me too. Me too. And we love the English setters. And I hunted over pointers most of the time there for 4 days. And they're not too shabby either, those English pointers. But the setter is a little more romantic, I think.
I do agree with that,
yeah,
yes.
You bet. Do you have a dog now?
Yes, I do. I have a Brittany and an English setter.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
They're both rescued.
Yeah. Brittany's are great, too.
Yes, they really are.
Yeah, I like the Brittany's. Okay, let's see, what else? Oh, I think it's time, Bob's not here, but we always like to bring in the band because it kind of livens things up a little. And Norm, you'll have to do the thing, okay?
I'm the big boss fast.
Yeah.
A little louder, Norm, a little louder.
For me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yes. Where's Bob?
Yeah. Where's Bob when you need him? Your yeah was good, but it wasn't quite as robust as his yeah. All right, let's see. The only thing I have to report, I'm not doing much fishing right now. I'm into my hunting mode, but I can tell you something exciting. If you're an angler and you still want to keep on fishing, you can. And here's what you do. You go to the Sporting Journal website. Now listen carefully. I'm going to give you a good tip. You go to www.sportingjournal.com, and you get to the website, and you click on Outdoor Connections, all right? Right there at the very beginning of the website, you see Outdoor Connections. You click on that, and then you go to Fishing Hotspots, and the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife has done a wonderful job going over all of the different places in Maine where you can still legally fish, and there are a lot of them. And they tell you where to go and what type of fish you can catch in the various spots. It's a very comprehensive report. They did a good job on it, and I commend them for that, and hope you will, if you're still a fisherman, you're still willing to angle, make sure you check that out. It'll tell you where to go and where you can fish still in the month of October. And I see, do you have anything in the fishing world, Norm?
No, I don't.
You're not in the fishing mode either?
No, that's, my rod's been put away.
Yeah, so. me too.
I probably should be uncoiling my fly line.
yeah, get the memory out of it.
Yes.
Do you have either one of you gents fish?
I fish. I do fish.
Yeah. What kind of fishing you like, John?
Well, I like brook fishing, brook trout.
Yeah.
And I also like ice fishing.
Do you? I used to do that when I was younger, but I don't ice fish anymore. I run away to Florida. But I did a lot of ice fishing years ago. It's fun. How about you, Scott?
Yes, I do enjoy trout fishing over in the Ranger Lakes area, or I'm not far from there, and also nearby the Androscoggin River. Androscoggin River has phenomenal bass fishing.
Isn't that
so
something?
We get the best of both worlds very nearby.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a nice fishery. Yeah. Okay, I think that wraps up the fishing report, and we'll have another one next week. Hopefully Bob will be here to take care of that. And let's see, we're going to go to a break in a second, but first we As we do every week on this program, we generously give away something special if you know the answer to our trivia question. And Bob Lehman has agreed to provide you with one of his hand-tied streamer flies if you know the answer to Scott's question.
Okay, and the question is, a common term in Maine in the mid-1700s was King's Arrow Pine. What did it mean?
All right, that's a. What do you think, Norm? Is that a toughie?
For me, it would be, because I've never heard of it.
Okay. So. All right. There you go. The number to call, 1-800-966-1039. You ponder that, and we'll be right back. Okay, this was probably the shortest commercial break in Blueberry Broadcasting history. I'm not sure what happened, but...
I really think it was, because I couldn't believe
it. Oh, well, I welcome the time. I appreciate the time. Okay, we have callers backing up now, and we want to... And Scott Lindsay's waiting to judge your answer, and we want you to tell him... There's a common term in Maine in the mid-1700s. It was called King's Arrow Pine. What does that mean? We want you to tell us what that's all about in your own words. And if you get the right answer, Bob Lehman is going to mail you a lovely streamer fly hand-tied by him.
And you get two callers.
All right, let's take one. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Where are you from?
I'm from Orono.
And your first name?
Ruth.
Okay, you're from Orono, and it's, you say it's Bruce?
Ruth. No, Ruth. R-U-T-H.
Oh, Ruth. Okay. You didn't sound like a Bruce. Ruth?
Okay, that's good.
All right. Nice to have, we always love to have the ladies call in. Do you think you have an answer?
I think I do. A King's Arrow Pine was a pine tree that grew very straight, very tall, and very big, and they were used to make masts for the ships, for the British Navy.
Well, that is a perfect answer, right on.
I think so. Good for you, Ruth.
Yay!
Wow, that was good. How'd you know that?
Well, I grew up in southern Maine, and there was a King's Pine in South Berwick when I was a girl, and my parents took me to see it. And I just love history and reading, and thought it was the coolest thing in the world that there was still something in 1970-whatever when I was little.
Yeah.
17-something.
Yeah, and interesting.
Know, that was pretty nifty.
And you know, there was a minimum diameter, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was reading up on that today when I got the trivia question all assembled. They had to be at least 24 inches. 24 inches.
Yes.
Thank you, Scott. 24 inches in diameter, at least.
Wow.
And some of them were a heck of a lot bigger than that, too. Anyway,
I'm
that's
sure
the right answer. Good for you, Ruth. Anything else on your mind tonight?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, well, congratulations to you. We appreciate you listening to our program, and we're glad you're going to get one of Bob's streamer flies. If you'll stay on the line, Norm will get your address so we can mail it to you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ruth.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was the correct answer. It's called the Mark of the Broad Arrow, and I've seen some pictures of those. Have you seen those, Scott, of that arrow?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Yeah, how could the king get away with that? Anyway, he couldn't do that today, could he? Unless his name was Irving.
He ruled the land at that time, yeah.
yeah,
they
he did.
Had the most formidable navy in the world at
they
that
did.
Time. So
yeah.
they kind of wanted to yeah. keep those ships in yeah. the best shape they could.
So there were a lot of British men of war that were carrying Maine pine trees on the decks, right?
Yes.
Quite a thing, yeah. Okay, let's get down to business here. Again, if you just joined us, our guests are regional wildlife biologist Scott Lindsay from Gray and John Bernard, who is a member of the Wyndham Gorham Rod and Gun Club. He's a longtime bird hunter. He's a former science teacher in Portland, retired from that, and they've got a good story to tell. Before we have them tell what's going on with a pheasant, I thought it might give us a chance to get to know them. John, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. How did you end up being a gun dog man, and how do you enjoy it?
Well, have to go back when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I was in the second grade at a school called the Chapman School on the corner of Brighton Avenue and Kapisik Street. Now it's called Breakwater School. It was in the spring of the year, and the second grade teacher's name was Miss Ferranti. And there was a big commotion, a lot of noise outside our open windows. It was a very pleasant April spring day. And so I raised my hand and asked if she could look out and see what that was. And she said yes, and she invited me to the window as well. And we looked out, and it was two adult cock ringneck pheasants in a very formidable battle with each other.
You're no kidding.
That's the truth. And that was so interesting to me that I went home. I told in detail to my dad, my parents, and luckily in that classroom was a very artistic student named Joel Eastman, and he sketched it with a pencil and, you know, drawing paper. And so I showed that to my dad, and that just led to bigger and better things.
All right. And you also took up raising gun dogs, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. When did you get your first gun dog?
I got the first, well, it was to be a pet. It was a little unweaned black lab puppy, but she ended up being a bird dog. And I got her in 1967, 2 years after I got married, and she went on to be a good flushing, retrieving pheasant dog.
Yeah, those labs can be pretty surprising. Yeah,
yes.
I had a lab that was pretty good at that. Yeah, great. And Scott, how'd you get into, how'd you become a wildlife biologist?
Well, what I did is I had a lot of jobs early on that introduced me to different species of wildlife, and some of it was in Maine, some elsewhere, other states out west, and I kind of worked with a lot of different species and just have always had an interest in wildlife and how it's managed, and always enjoyed going out and working with it and hunting. And it's something that just brought me back to Maine Fish and Wildlife. It's something I always wanted to do. I can remember when I was in my early 20s, I stopped by one of the regional offices and spoke to a staff person that worked there. And kind of at that point, I just decided, yeah, this is really what I want to do. So I ended up working as a regional wildlife biologist first in Jonesboro, and I moved down to the Region A in Gray right around 2005. I've worked with some phenomenal people in this department, and fortunate to work with people like John on the pheasant program, and it just makes my job very enjoyable to have so many positive things going on with wildlife.
Are you a graduate of UMO?
I actually went to the University of Maine at Farmington.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. Did you major in wildlife?
They did not have a formal wildlife program there, but it was a biology program.
Yeah.
And I took as many wildlife courses as I could, and then I learned a lot, of course, during the jobs. I mean, you learn a lot, outside of the books as well, and that's so I kind of did a little bit of both there, and that's where I kind of learned specific wildlife skills by doing them.
In your spare time, do you hunt or fish?
I do. I do both.
Yep.
And I would say that that it's ironic that maybe some people can handle it better than I, but this happens to be the busiest time of the year for us, so I don't get out as much as I like.
No.
So I'm always thinking when I retire, I'll be able to do it more. Hopefully, I'm going to get better and not have to wait till I retire to go out and do it more. So it's I enjoy it.
Speaking as an older man, don't rush it.
Right.
No.
Right.
All right. Good for you. All right. And you like to trout fish?
I do, yes. Yes.
You fly fish?
I do fly fish, and in fact, my daughter recently, she caught a beautiful fish up on Musluk-Maguntuk Lake. We weren't expecting to do it all. It was a windy day. She was just practicing with a rod and throwing it out there, and then all of a sudden, she got a nice trout on the end of it. So yes, we do enjoy that a lot.
Do you have a favorite dry fly?
I would say I don't. The one we've used the gray ghost, and I don't know the names of the flies as well. I certainly can say that as I had a friend of mine that I met over at the Aquasic Rangeley Sporting Heritage Museum, and he gave me some tips on different flies that he had, and shared with me a little box of flies, and I've been able to enjoy those, but I definitely do not know the names of them, nor could I have the eyes to tie them myself.
speaking of that, one of the challenges, of course, is as you get older, your eyes aren't as good. And tying on like a number 18 for me is an ultimate challenge. And Norm, I don't know if you, would you agree with that? You don't have a trouble tying them on, do you?
Not yet.
Well, we have a listener. We have a listener who sent us, an 18 is considered to be a small fly, right? We had a listener send us a number 32, was it?
32.
32. This thing was so small, it looked like what did it look like? It was so small. And
it was pretty small.
Yeah. And he told us, a guy from Chicopee, Mass. Sent that to us. Sent one to Norm, one to Bob, one to me. And it's called, are you ready for this? It's called the Wicked Pisser. Isn't that unbelievable?
Wow.
That's the name of the fly.
All right. He's had success with it then.
Yeah.
Probably frustrates the person trying to put the tippet on.
I'm going to figure out how to tie that on. It's going to be a challenge. All right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about, before we talk about the program of the Wyndham Gorham Rod and Gun Club, before the program, we talked about the fact that when I was a kid, quite a few years ago, in the late 40s, I used to see, my dad hunted, and I think a couple of times we actually went pheasant hunting, and they were stalking pheasant in the entire state, right? Back then, can you explain that program?
What's the
history of that?
The pheasant program has gone through various iterations throughout the past 80 years. And I'm happy to talk about this because I think there are many people in Maine who don't really realize the history we have here with pheasant. And again, at one point, we had as many as about 50,000 birds raised at what is today the Maine Wildlife Park. At that time, it was called the Maine Game Farm, and that was established in 1930. And the original purpose of that facility was to raise pheasants for release in the state. And they would also, of course, have eggs there. And at some point, usually in the 50s, into the early 70s, I believe, they would have a program where they would send eggs out to people throughout the state. And whoever had those eggs, they would get like 100 eggs. They would raise those birds, get ready to the point where they could be released. And the state would match those, and they would give them 200 birds back. So it was kind of a way to promote people raising these birds, getting more out there. And the pheasant farm in Gray had quite a capacity, so they were able to do this match program. So at one point, yes, correct, there are people that were in Aroostook County, all counties of the state that were doing this. Now it is to the point, though, that the birds that are raised through the pheasant program, they are just released in York and Cumberland counties only. It does not mean that someone that wants to raise their own birds and release them, they certainly can do that on their own. But the state pheasants are released only in York and Cumberland counties by statute. And we currently release about 2,200 annually. So it is much diminished from what it once was, but we still do have a very, very strong following of very dedicated pheasant hunters, and generally they pay their pheasant stamp is what funds this program, and it is pretty much self-sustaining. There's some years where we go a little bit above, and we try to find ways to make the numbers work, but in large part, we have people that are buying these stamps, allowing us to buy birds. And we no longer raise them, of course, at Gray. We do have to go out to competitive bid for these birds.
What happened to that statewide program? Why did it die, Scott?
I think it was something that, as far as the capacity, it got to the point where if something is really not sustainable at the current level, they decided they had to kind of ratchet back at that. There wasn't enough success raising those in these other parts of the state. And I think at that time they decided that we're going to focus more in the southern part of the state. We felt as though the climate would be maybe a little bit kinder to these birds. There were some who believed that they potentially could breed in the wild, and they may be able to contribute to a population that way. In fact, there was some period of time where there was period where you could not hunt a hen pheasant. It was cocks only, because they really wanted to preserve those hens, and so that was something that was getting a lot of debate. Usually, I think that was around the 1990s, late 1990s and early 2000s, well, that was happening. So I really think it was more of a capacity, and we just realized that the main game farm morphed into something else, and we no longer had the capacity to raise upwards of 50,000 birds. It's one of those things that usually comes down to money. If you don't have enough money to keep something going, then it really just could not continue at its current trajectory.
Does Maine have adequate habitat and terrain for pheasants to thrive?
We have been good at finding places where we have enough habitat that the birds will actually find cover. And that's one of the things that John does very well. And we have many cooperatives with the fish and game clubs that really pitch in to help us with this. And, it's York and Cumberland counties. They have to go out in a part of the state that is more heavily developed than the rest of the state. But yet the challenge is finding places where you have a large acreage where you can have some cover that a bird is going to stay. I mean, they're not going to stay in a heavily forested, mature woodland or spruce forests. I mean, they really need to be in places where there's a good mix of some woods, some hedgerows, some fields, some early successional habitat growing up. All this type of habitat is hard to find. So we really have to beat the bush and go out and try to find cooperative private landowners who are agreeable for us to stock pheasants on their land. That's a big part of what this program relies on is the people that go out and make those contacts with the landowners.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to ask John to tell you folks at home a little bit about the Windham Rod and Gun Club and the program they have. Stay with us. We'll be back right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our guests tonight, if you join us late, are Scott Lindsay, who's the regional wildlife biologist down in Gray, and also John Bernard, who's a member of the Windham Gorham Rod and Gun Club. John, it's really fascinating that your club has been stalking pheasants in southern Maine since, did you say, 1947?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Explain to our listeners, if you would, what the setup is. You've got the Windham Gorham Rod and Gun Club. And how do you make this program work?
When I joined in about 1990, we put on breakfasts to earn money, and we put on pheasant banquets to earn money, and we would order through the state chicks, 6 or 8 week old chicks. At that time, they came from the Sharon Pheasant Farm in Sharon, Connecticut, and I guess when I started, there was a pen that held maybe 1,000 birds. And I went and looked at it, and the pen was in disrepair, so there was many birds outside the pen as inside the pen. And I thought we really should, tear that down and build a new, bigger one. And so we did do that, and Phil Bosenhart was the game biologist. And so we built it big enough to hold 1,500 birds.
Wow.
And so then that succeeded, and we built another pen, and that was on the Wilson Road in Gorham, near the Covered Bridge Road. And so then that was another 1,500, so we had a 3,000 capacity. And we were releasing them at about 40 different release sites approved by the state game biologist Phil Bosenhart in Cumberland in York County.
So how do you decide what the where the site release sites are going to be? How do you make that decision? And you decide that, Scott, right?
generally the club would often bring those sites to our attention.
Yeah.
Because they live right there in those communities, and they may know a landowner or a farm that might be amenable to this. And they would let us know what the sites are. Then I would go and inspect the site, make sure that it is large enough to have pheasant hunting so people could safely hunt there, make sure that it's accessible enough that people can get to it without parking on the side of a very busy road when they're unloading their dogs. And also we're looking at proximity of houses around there. We try to do it in a way it's going to minimize any potential conflict. So we look for good sites, and if it makes the cut, then we do map that and we put it on our website so that everyone knows where the sites are. There's nothing secretive about it. It's all well publicized. And we put signs out front saying that this is a pheasant release site.
Oh, do you?
Yes, we do.
Well, in the old days, they used to, I think in Massachusetts, they used to try to keep it secret. And the challenge was to try to know somebody so you could get they called it the list.
Paul, I would have people that, you're right. And I would have people that would actually call me up, and I guess even the sign out front is not enough. They wanted exact coordinates of where the birds were released. And it's like, well, we're not going to do that. You got to get out and go out with your dog and walk around, you'll find them. But we do try to make it so that people can find those sites. And
how many birds at one release, roughly?
We generally do about 30 at each site, and we do that 3 times during the month of October. Or one would be just prior to opening day.
Yeah.
And then we usually do 2 during the month of October.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, one of the thoughts that crossed my mind as an avid deer hunter who has watched over the years the accessible land getting less and less and less. If I go down, and I don't know Southern Maine very well, to be honest with you, but if I went down to your neck of the woods, could I honestly find a public place where I could actually hunt without knowing somebody?
Yes, absolutely. You could certainly, I mean, speaking from myself with our department lands, we have about 30,000 acres of wildlife management areas within my region, which goes from Kittery up to about Bethel. So we have a lot of upland sites, and we actually do have a lot of rural towns in York and in Cumberland County. Once you get outside the coastal strip, it gets quite a bit quieter, and there are places within those towns that, you know, were farms or currently are farms.
Yeah.
And those are the sites that we look for releasing these birds.
So there is IF&W land where I could hunt?
Yes, you do. And wildlife management areas you can, but I would say of the 20 release sites that we have currently, I would say only maybe 3 of them are on state wildlife management areas now, and those are good. Those are easy.
Yeah.
We guarantee they're going to be available. The other 17 are on private properties. So again, requires a knock on the door, requires contact with that private property owner. And at the end of the season, I want to commend the gentleman next to me here, because talk about landowner appreciation. John, can you tell them what you do at the end of the season, how you show landowners?
Yeah.
Well, actually, it starts in the summer because I make good strawberry rhubarb pies. I think they're good. And I
take them
to each landowner. And then at the end of the season, around the holidays, Thanksgiving or Christmas, I do the same thing with apple pies or wild Maine blueberry pies. And that's just a token of appreciation of allowing hunters to go on.
Oh, that's great. What a nice gesture. Now, do you make your own crust or you buy it at the supermarket?
Because I'm making so many pies, I do know how to make crust, but it is time consuming. So I do usually buy the crust to top and bottom in a package.
Pillsbury, right? Pillsbury?
Well, Pillsbury is pretty expensive, so so I go with Hannaford's usually.
Okay.
But I do have my own apple trees, believe it or not, on an 80 by 100 foot lot. And they're Liberty apple trees, they're heirloom apple trees. And I make pretty nice apple pies, I think. And then I have quite a few spots where I go pick wild Maine native blueberries.
So you show appreciation to the landowner.
Yes, which, very important.
Which begets the question, if Joe Smith allows you to stock 40 birds on his land. Do you also get a concurrent agreement with him that he will allow others to hunt besides himself?
Yes. Is there
some mechanism to ensure that he doesn't have the whole 40 birds to himself?
Yes. I'm sure they understand that these are state-owned birds,
yep,
and we're putting them there on an honor system that he will allow during that pheasant hunting season, people with the proper license and pheasant stamp or endorsement may come in and safely hunt those birds.
Okay. I'm getting the sign here to do a short commercial break here. Again, if you have questions for either Scott or John, you can call us at 1-800-966-1039, 1-800-966-1039. We encourage you to call and ask these gents any questions you might come to mind. I want to remind you, too, that this program is sponsored and has been for many years by General Appliance in Brewer. They're the place to go for any type of appliance needs. They have both new and used appliances. They have, what do they have, Norm? They got ranges?
Yeah, ranges.
Refrigerators?
Pretty much anything that's gas.
Any type of appliance, right?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
Correct.
And they also have, that funny toilet. What is it called?
It's called, well, I usually say ride the wave, but it's a, it's a compost toilet.
The compost toilet.
Exactly.
It's high tech, right?
That's, yes. In today's lingo, I would say very much so. No moving parts.
No septic system.
Nope.
Nothing to jam up.
Nope. Buy it and install it, and they're good.
And that's it.
That's it.
And it's kind of magic. I could never figure out how that worked. But anyway, they have them over there at General Appliance and Brewer. They're great folks. Gary Coleman's the new boss over there. He bought out his former boss, Al Elkin. Gary's got all kinds of experience in servicing all of these appliances. He stands behind everything he sells, and they're just great folks to do business with. The prices are always fair. General Appliance and Brewer, they have a phone number if you want to give them a jingle at 989-3714. 989-3714, you can ask for Gary. And they're located over there on Center Street in Brewer. Don't forget them. They also sell gas lights and mantles for your camps as well. General Appliance in Brewer. We've been patronizing them for years and encourage you to do so as well. And again, if you have a question for our guests here tonight, it's 1-800-966-1039. Did you have a caller queued up?
Somebody was trying to call in, and when I got to it, they hung up. So whoever's trying to call, keep it up.
Oh,
because I'll
call again. We'd love to to hear from you. Okay, so you have done all the stocking for this year, have you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
And where should I go? where should I go to hunt?
The best place I could tell you to go would be to Cornish, Maine. The owner would be David and Lori Pike. They own the largest Jersey dairy milking cows farm in the world.
Oh, an existing operating dairy.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Dairy farmers. And they have these big cornfields, and they generously let us stock in East Baldwin, West Baldwin, and Cornish Innervale.
Oh, that's great.
And any of those places would be absolutely excellent for you to go.
So I would knock on the door and ask them for permission? How's that work?
Well, no, I don't think you'd have to knock on the door. Those are on the internet. You can get the map through Scott and just go to it. There'll be a sign at the site that will say this is a stocking site, and park there and just walk in and enjoy yourself.
Oh, that's exciting. Now, what's the website? Is there a website I can go to?
Yes, it's www.mefishwildlife.com.
Oh, it's right.
That's our state website. And on there, you're going to look for the tab for pheasant hunting. You'll see a link for pheasant hunting mm-hmm. down on the left-hand side, and that will call up the details from this year's pheasant stalking efforts, as well as maps, Google Earth images of all the locations of where we stalked pheasants. And again, yes, all permissions have been given by that landowner, so hunters don't need to check with them. It's all been done.
Okay. I know you saw the dog I had, and I've seen your dog, I think, John, going way back. But I took my dog out to South Dakota because I wanted her to get some more experience, and she was getting into the grouse woods. And it was fantastic hunting those around the cornfields out there. And have you ever done that?
I've never done that.
It's exciting.
This pheasant program really has fulfilled all my needs. And I should say I've rescued quite a few, you know, bird dogs over the years. And I take them out in the off season and they will find these holdover birds and point them.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And I use a blank gun. I flush the bird, fire a blank pistol.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a caller, I think, who may have questions for you. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hey, yeah, I've never hunted pheasants, and I've hunted all my life, but I always like to see them. Anyway, the reason I called is you were talking about the King's Pine.
Right.
Captain David Clark sailed out of Perry, Maine, and he was rigged to haul those masts to England, Ireland, Scotland. He would go by Hudson Bay and pick up some of their supplies. On the way back, he would bring livestock, Jerseys, Guernseys, and Ashes, to the whole New England coast.
No kidding.
David Clark, my mother was a Clark, and she named me David after Captain David Clark. I just thought that would be interesting.
Well, certainly that is interesting. Wonderful. So you're named after a ship captain. That's good.
Captain David Clark, sailed out of Perry, Maine, many, many years ago.
Yeah.
I'm 83, so I'm getting up there, too, but I didn't go to sea. I've always been a landlubber.
Yeah. Well, you and I are contemporaries, I can tell you that.
And, I got a really interesting story. A fishing game club, and I won't go into it now, but I was at the meeting when they tore up the strong main buck and doe club. They broke the windows and had a food fight. I was right in the middle of it.
They had a food fight?
Anyway, I'll let you guys go. I really, really, really enjoy your program. I just recently retired back here in Maine, and it's good to hear somebody that can speak English again.
Now, wait a minute. Hold the phone. You said you were 83, and you just recently retired?
Yeah. Well, I haven't really retired. I work every day, but...
Yeah, me too. Me too. You got to keep working, you know? Have purpose.
When I say I retired, I threw all my credit cards away. You know, I kept working, but I paid cash for everything.
There you go. So, all right, you're an old schooler, I can tell. Nice to hear from you, sir.
Hey, yeah, you guys too.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Somebody's probably wondering at home, if I want to buy, I could buy some chicks. Let's say I live in East Corinth and I've got 20 acres out there and I got some fields. I could just go buy some pheasant chicks, raise them myself, and release them when they're mature. I could do that, right? No strings attached?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can, Paul. You can do that. There are several species of game birds. I mean, pheasant, chukka, quail, Hungarian partridge. There's different birds that people buy, and they can release them on their own property or on someone's property whom they have permission for. And again, that is just done something privately. We do just want to make sure that those birds are coming from safe sources. So they do have to be certified by NPIP, which is the National Poultry Improvement Program. And that is just to make sure they're coming from a certified flock, that the birds are safe and healthy. And if those come in, that's generally something that is administered out of the Maine Department of Agriculture now. So we do no longer issue permits for people to do that. They do not require those permits anymore.
Wow. And so if you buy the chicks from a licensed dealer, that's taken care of, right?
That is right. Correct. If you just check with them and make sure if you do bring them in from... there are in-state sources of birds and there are out-of-state. And if there are out-of-state sources of birds, you just want to certainly make sure that they are NPIP certified.
Are there more than one dealer in Maine?
Yes, I believe there are several? Sources for at least pheasant in Maine. There certainly are. So,
okay.
Yes.
Do you know any of them? Could you name any of those, John?
I can name one in Milo, and I think it's Mr. Estes.
Oh, he's got, I've hunted up there.
So he has a shooting preserve.
Oh, he raises them? I didn't.
I'm positive he raises them.
Oh, he got a wonderful place up there. I've hunted.
Yes, indeed.
I hunted my dog up there.
Yes.
Yeah, Al Estes, I think his name?
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't realize he raised them there.
I'm quite sure he does.
And so he sells chicks?
You can check on it.
I'll have to check on that. We have another caller, I guess. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hello.
Hello. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Howard Unity.
Okay, what's up?
So I was once quite the devotee of the ringneck pheasant and read everything I could find and had pheasants. And one part of the story is beyond the scope of this call. But the example of wild turkey and wild turkey releases and their failure, and then the use of wild caught turkey applies to pheasants perhaps almost equally. So it would be much better if one wanted the pheasants to reproduce and survive in the wild if wild-caught birds were released, or at least F1 generation. I'm sure the wildlife biologist there knows the example of the wild turkey. When the pen-reared turkeys were released, they failed year after year in New York State and elsewhere until a net system was devised in which they could be trapped and then the wild birds transported to New York, and then they succeeded.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. You agree with that, Scott?
Yes, I think you would probably have a bird that would survive better than pen-raised birds would, and potentially they would result in more naturally reproducing birds. That's certainly quite possible. At this point, what our department sees this hunt as is pretty much a put and take hunt, a stalking hunt, and we don't believe that, given the relative scarcity of agricultural lands we have in most of Maine, the southern part of the state at least, it's unlikely we're going to have that when you compound that with our climate, and also predation is going to take a heavy toll on them. So yes, I agree. If you really wanted to get the highest number of net wild reproducing birds, that would be possible. But I think what we're doing now is the best way to get the most number of birds out at the places that we think that they can be hunted, and probably our best option at this time. We don't have any real desire to really restore natural wild populations at this time. Although there's no question, I mean, we do get some natural, reproduction in the wild takes place. But
some of these stock pheasants do reproduce occasionally.
They hang around, so I'm sure it does happen on occasion. Yeah. We occasionally get reports of chicks, but I have not confirmed that, and it's unlikely it's going to be of anything of significance.
Okay, thank you, caller. We're a little bit up against the clock here. We appreciate your call.
Thank you.
A couple of points I want to make. If you're wondering, these chicks are $14.25 a pop, right? Roughly?
Yes. In that neighborhood. We do buy them as adult birds now, yes.
Okay. And John, your favorite pheasant recipe?
Would be roast pheasant, and I'd put in an Arnold's corn bread stuffing with diced apple and diced onions, and I would cover the bird with layers of olive oil, so it won't dry out, and put it in a roasting pan with maybe an inch of water on the bottom, and it will be delicious.
And how long would you cook it?
Well, it depends on the size of the bird.
Yeah.
So you'd have to put a meat thermometer in there,
yeah,
and if it reaches the correct temperature, it's cooked.
Don't overcook it, right?
Yes. No, gee, don't overcook
it. Well, my wife has a recipe called Hunter's Pheasant, and she makes it with chicken. But I think it's delicious. It's fantastic. Imagine how good it would be with real pheasant.
I think it would be very good.
Yeah. Well, gents, it's been a pleasure having you on board. John, good for you. You're doing great work.
Thank you.
I'm sure everybody down there appreciates your dedication in this program. It's the Wyndham Gorham Rod and Gun Club, and I guess there are one or two clubs that are also doing similar work with pheasant, right?
Yes.
Yes, there are several additional clubs, and on Sundays when the birds come, I have about 30 helpers that show up, and we get the birds all out. So it's mostly in fishing game clubs, and they do a wonderful job, and it's much appreciated.
All right. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Come back soon.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Our guest next week on Maine Outdoors is going to be Maine deer biologist Nathan Bieber. We're going to talk about deer next week right here on Maine Outdoors.